if I don't haven't been on my soapbox already, I guess I'll get up a little bit higher on it and say that the athlete that is time crunched, the athlete that only has 4, 5, 6 hours is going to be the greatest beneficiary of this information, because that athlete doesn't have time on their side. So the professional that's training 20, 30, 40 hours a week, they can make up for a lot of training inefficiencies with total volume. The athlete that only has a handful of hours per week, they can't do that. They don't have that luxury. They need to be very specific.
The N Plus One, global yet very local cycling podcast, brought to you by Lowland Cycling.
Thanks for joining, Greg. For the listeners, can you just give us a background of how you got started into cycling?
Sure. Yeah. And thank you guys so much for having me on here. So my intro was back in the, late 1980s, mountain biking was starting to get pretty popular. I lived in central Connecticut and it was an amazing spot to be mountain biking. Believe it or not, a lot of people roll their eyes at that, but great single track. First bike I ever had was a Trek Antelope 820. And it was a complete hunk of junk by compared to today's standards, but I love that bike. And that was the gateway for me to really get into the sport. So I've been pursuing cycling in some capacity, whether it was road, mountain bike, cyclocross, since I was probably 10, 12 years old. So that's almost 30 years now. And I always swore off road cycling, said I was never going to be one of those shaved leg roadie guys. And funny enough, eventually that came to fruition. And in terms of my career, I've always been involved in the cycling industry in some capacity, whether it's riding or racing or working with various bicycle companies. And I also have some background in business development and simulation software. So I worked for a consultancy for about 10 years where we did one-to-one consulting with primarily CFD and CAD CAM tools and help them bring products to market. So I think there's some parallels to what Inside does in terms of creating a technology that was maybe considered, hey, this isn't something that can be done, and change the paradigm the same way that a lot of CFD tools have done through the years. So there's some interesting connections to what I've done previously. And then more recently with Inside, this is a project that was really launched to coaches commercially about 5 years ago, and really on a more global stage in the last 2-3 years. So something that I'm happy to be a part of and really excited about where hopefully we can grow this thing too.
Yeah. And can you tell a little bit more about Inside and the software? Because it's recently came on the market a couple of years ago. Before that, it was primarily used by the Pro Tour teams and a lot of, let's say, federations, and not so much for the, let's say, broader audience, individual coaches and coaching practices.
Definitely, yeah. So we, Inside as a commercially available product for coaches, was launched probably about 3 years ago, and there's been numerous updates since then. But prior to that, it was really exclusive to teams and federations. And this was really any endurance sport, so anything that had a time and distance component. And what we're able to do is capture, whether it be lactate values, gas exchange information from a lab using metabolic cart, or power data, and this coming from the bike, we could take that and disseminate that into a complete physiological or metabolic profile. So our origins go back to really probably the HTC High Road days. And that was back in the late 2000s. And the team was using it to really determine what are the attributes of riders and use it as a bit of a tool to assess athletes that might be coming up through the ranks and people that they want to determine, do they have the chops to make it as a pro? And our first commercial client, believe it or not, was the French Swimming Federation. Since swimming is so dependent on the anaerobic piece, they really wanted to determine, can we quantify the anaerobic power? And with VLA max being one of the pieces of the equation that we're able to assess or actually determine inside was a very powerful tool as they determined to be able to use for their athletes and their preparation for different, whether it be Olympics or world championships.
Right. Yeah. So that's really cool. I was caught for Inside because of the pro teams at first. And myself, I was looking to expand my coaching. So I was looking into, okay, VO2 max testing, metabolic rate testing, lactate testing, et cetera, et cetera. And I ran into Inside and I thought, okay, this is, at first, to be honest, I thought, okay, this is too good to be true, right? It's software. So without actual, let's say, physical testing, so your physical testing on your trainer or on your bike or doing lactate when swimming, etc. How is this possible? Can you tell me a little bit, or can you tell the listeners a little bit more about how is it possible? How did you get to, let's say, all of the values behind the actual results?
Sure. Yeah, and maybe it's helpful before I do that is to talk about what some of the metrics are mm-hmm. coming out inside. So when I say complete metabolic or physiological profile, what we're talking about is VO2 max, VLA max. So I think a lot of people are probably familiar with VO2 max. That's your aerobic capacity. VLA max might be new. So I'm going to give a quick description of what this is. So by definition, it's your maximum ability to produce lactate. So what that means is how anaerobic or how aerobic is this athlete? And really what we're able to define using that number. So if we're talking about somebody that is a Grand Tour stage racer and they're trying to get a high placing in the overall, they're probably going to want a lower VLA max, something like 0.3 to 0.4 millimoles per liter per second. And what that is capturing is their ability to produce lactate on that second to second basis. Now, what this is governing is the percentage of your VO2 max you can tap into at threshold. So the lower your VLA max, the higher your threshold number will be, and the greater the percentage of your VO2 max you're able to utilize at threshold. In addition to that, it's also looking at your substrate utilization. Are you more dependent on carbohydrate, or are you more dependent on fat as a fuel source, better at sparing carbohydrate? And then in addition, it also helps us to understand lactate production and combustion rates. So once you take all those things in, you start to see that, oh, wow, yeah, VO2 max, that's important. If you are below 70, you're probably not going to be in the game to race professionally as a cyclist. But now, okay, let's say that we've gotten to a certain point in time and we want to get deeper data, deeper analytics on this athlete. If we can start to understand how's the race won or lost, where's the power coming from? Is it aerobic? Is it anaerobic? What does substrate utilization look like? How much grams of carbohydrate are being combusted? How much fat is being contributed to that effort? These are things that we can now utilize in our favor to create, whether it be a better training plan or to help in the race, thinking about fueling strategy, that could be a really good mm-hmm. one. Or, man, every time I go really hard and it's 500 watts and it's the fifth time I need to do that, I can't do it. That's where the wheels come off. So now we can see, all right, what's actually happening? What's that energy contribution percentage of aerobic and anaerobic? And also how much lactate is being produced and or combusted, depending on that level of energy being put out. And now we can tailor the training to fit the needs of that athlete very, very specifically.
Right. And making a small sidestep, and I'm not even sure if you've seen it, but recently Dylan Johnson created a video and he was talking about Trainer Road, and that me personally, I love Trainer Road. Jeff is a big Trainer Road. He does all the programs, and but there is his point was that often these workouts or the training plans are too hard, right? They are taxing too much. And then when I think about Inside and what you just spoke to is being able to do that a fifth maximum effort at 3 minutes, and or not maybe. And I think with Insight, you can quite easily bring that back to, okay, am I buffering too much lactate? I'm not being able to get rid of it, so I'm not able to complete that fifth set. And that could also be over the course of a couple of days when you do too much of those efforts, because you keep on building up lactate in your system, basically. Correct?
Yeah. And two things to expand on that, Jerry. So I think number one is, as we start to think about what are the benefits of this type of approach, so we can capture really good data using power only. And I think most athletes have a pretty good intuition. Am I a good sprinter? Am I a better climber? Am I kind of in the middle? Can I do a little bit of everything? But I like to, and we as an organization are always struggling to come up with better ways to explain this to people. So maybe a good way to think of it is, most of us can go on WebMD and type into Google, hey, my arm hurts, or I think I sprained my wrist. How should I treat it? What are the ways to go ahead and get this thing to heal as quick as possible? The next step is I go to a doctor, maybe they do some lab tests, whether it's a broken arm or lab tests based on, yeah, I'm just not feeling very energetic. Maybe you have, if you're a male, low testosterone or a thyroid issue. So what I would say is, what Insight is doing is giving you that deeper data. It's really giving you the behind the scenes as what is happening, what is contributing to your performance. And it gives a better starting point in terms of moving forward through time. What are those, the right ratio of work to rest within a given training day? And then within a training block, what do I need to be doing to get the right adaptation that I'm going for? Do I want to be better at my time trial? Do I want to be better as a sprinter? So those are the things that hopefully athletes will start to understand and it'll resonate with them. Now, the other thing you bring up is this idea of FTP testing. And this is a real challenge because there's so much information out there. There's so many people that are relying on it. You go on any message board, whether it be Slow Twitch or others, and you're going to find a whole host of articles and or questions written about, hey, my FTP is this, how do I increase it? What I think most people are not understanding is the real driver of your FTP number based on that 20-minute test that you might be doing. And whether it's 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, is your anaerobic contribution. How much anaerobic power are you producing over that period of time? So if we're using 20 minutes as an example, a lot of people are going to use 95% of that to come up with their quote threshold or their FTP. Well, if you have a very high VLA max, let's say you're a sprinter, you could be something like 70%. So to your point, and what I think Dylan was probably mentioning is, somebody that's a sprinter that uses that 95% is going to be way overshooting their actual threshold and training way too hard for what their goals are, and maybe completely missing what their fat max zone is, i.e. not getting the right type of training in terms of the stimulus that would probably be ideal for the adaptations they're going for. And then on the flip side is, you definitely are going to have some athletes that could use 95% of that 20 minute. That's going to be somebody with a very low VLA max, somebody that can go out there and they're more of a diesel. They're better at using fat as a fuel source. One's not better than another, but we need to anchor to, all right, how are we capturing the essence of what makes up this athlete's performance? And what are the important markers to help us determine that?
Right.
Yeah. So we have this mutual friend, Jacob, who just started riding, and he's been a lifetime athlete. He was racing motocross, so he's got a lot of skills and young guy, right? He recovers early, recovers really quickly. But if he took this test and he's just starting out, he's done maybe half a dozen races total. He takes the test, he gets this information. What is he going to be able to use that for as he goes forward with his racing career?
Yeah. So right now I should also preface by saying that Insight is utilized by coaches, and they are then using this information to help their athletes create a prescription for those athletes. So in somebody like Jacob's case, you'd be able to determine, A, what's his baseline, so that 2 months from now, 3 months from now, when you come back and do a follow-up test, are we getting the right gains? So if we're only thinking about FTP testing, that's one metric. And usually I can't think of an instance where the race was won based on your ability to ride steady state at FTP. You're either going above it, there's surges, or you're below it. You need to think about fat utilization, being able to preserve glycogen stores. So these are all things that need to be considered. And these are things that traditional testing a lot of times misses. So now if we can start pulling those pieces together and really figure out, all right, what is this athlete's natural predisposition? Are they more of a sprinter? So if they have the ability to produce a ton of lactate and maybe put out an impressive sprint, are they interested in going out there and being a sprinter, quote unquote? Well, maybe this athlete you talk about, maybe they have eyes on racing Ironmans or Leadville or Dirty Kanza. So we can start to coordinate training for that athlete that's really going to help enhance whatever they're trying to do in a shorter period of time. So confirmation bias is a real jerk sometimes. And what I mean by that is we can get lulled into this idea, all right, my FTP went up by 15 watts. Well, what's that really mean? Do we know where that energy came from? Number one. Number two is that 15 watts can probably be thought of as, all right, day-to-day fluctuations in your unique physiology and power meter fluctuations. If we think about plus or minus 1%, 2% on 300 watts, well, half of that comes from your power meter being up or down on a given day. And the other half is certainly just natural variance day to day that we're going to see from a physiological perspective. So you can't really determine too much from that. And so once we start to anchor to things that don't really have a foundation in that individual's physiology, not to mention the peer-reviewed science, it gets really hard and really gray in terms of what we're trying to do with this athlete and hopefully giving them a better way to create training and a way for the athlete to really see, like, let's give them carrots to help them understand what they're chasing after. So if they're going out there and just performing day-to-day training and racing on Zwift, maybe we're trying to encourage them, let's get some more structure into your training with some of the outputs that you're able to see when you can see, hey, here's what your anaerobic and aerobic contribution looks like at a given power. And this is why you're struggling when the race really gets surgy and it's going 500 watts for 30 seconds. And that athlete can see, yeah, that's where I have a bit of a deficit. That's why things are starting to come apart for me. And now we can create some training that's specific to that. That's really powerful in the eyes of the athlete.
Yeah, gotcha. So like theoretically, he should be testing at the beginning of the season to get his baseline, throughout the season, make sure that the training is working, and then maybe at the end of the season to see if he still has enough to continue racing or if his season should be over?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways that I would probably prefer to answer that. One is, let's just think about the mechanism for change that we're trying to get, at least from an adaptation. So without getting too nerdy here, if we think about what is the goal of the training, are we trying to increase VO2 max? Okay, that's something that probably within 6 to 8 weeks we could see if we think about what is the half-life of cell mitochondria, and then we extrapolate that out to what can we actually see in terms of fidelity in the testing. And that's regardless of the silo testing. So that, yeah, probably 6 to 8 weeks would be on the shorter side of when we'd want to test and then retest. Now, if we're talking about more of a fiber type, a muscle fiber type adaptation, so this would be changing VLA max. You want to get an athlete to be a better sprinter, or you want to get them to be able to use more of their fast twitch muscle fibers in a slow twitch capacity. So think about going out there doing some fat max rides, some longer, probably 5-6 hour rides on a weekly basis, that kind of thing, to help that conversion process. That's something that's going to take longer, 3, 4, maybe even 5 months, depending on the athlete. Now, this is a bit of an art at this point, because everyone's going to adapt differently. Everyone's going to go through these changes in a different time course. So there's nothing that says you, Jeff, are going to be able to see this change faster than you, Jerry, or vice versa. That's something that's a little bit trial and error between the athlete and coach.
Right. Yeah. So that's, And Jacob is an XC mountain biker primarily, right? So, but also like to do the longer rides, especially in the beginning of the season. So that's when you think about a season, and how do you divide your season, building your base, and then getting more specific towards the actual racing season. And again, quote unquote, if COVID allows, that's a whole different whole different podcast. But it's actually a nice topic to talk about at some point. Is right, the gains that you get from structured training plus the additional insights from an inside test will actually tailor the training much more towards you, depending on the goals that you have. So I think there is a ton of value into that. And for example, take yourself as an example, Jeff, training for the Belgium Waffle ride, which was going to be early in the season. Now it's postponed until August. So you want to throw in a couple of XC rides or maybe enduro longer rides, but that does change your training plan. And you have to peak at different moments. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We were training one particular engine, right? And then it's like, oh, that's off. And so now we're going back to XC racing. So it's like, you gotta switch gears, you know, which I think the testing will show if I'm on the right path for that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, Jerry, you mentioned some of the World Tour teams that use Inside, and this is where we get some pretty good insights from the teams and the coaches working with the athletes at that level. But two athletes that come to mind are Wout Van Aert and Matthew Vanderpool. And Inside is not the thing that makes those athletes great. You could pull those guys off the couch and they're going to be fast. But what's really important for an athlete like that is they're doing so many different types of events that go from short, really high intensity efforts, whether it's a time trial or cyclocross, to then stage racing where each day might be 3 to 5 hours. And then the classics where it could be 6.5 hours. And really need to adapt to the rigors of that. So whether it's the insights that you can get from fueling, so, all right, how much carbohydrate do I need to take in on an hour-to-hour basis? How much muscle glycogen can I store? And like you said, Jeff, maybe you want to do some mountain bike racing. So if you're doing some mountain bike racing now, how do you structure that within the overall training to focus on Belgian Waffle ride and be able to have this compromise between being competitive now and also competitive at this longer, more steady grind style of an event? And there are ways to do that. There's also ways to get some short-term bumps if you really know what is the underlying physiology there. And there's some things that you can do, whether it's nutritional interventions or just some shorter training blocks to really get that athlete to peak form. So hopefully the theme here is really understanding what the underlying metrics or underlying data is, much like, as I mentioned before, you go to a doctor, you do some lab testing. Now you've got something to build a foundation off of. You've got something to be able to come back to and retest against in 2, 3, 4 months' time. And also you've got better data to be able to help create a training plan that's very bespoke or very specific to that individual.
Right. And you touched upon it somewhat, the, let's say, the fat adaptation, fat max, your combustion rate. Can you, with fueling strategies in mind, can you explain a little bit more about that, how Insight will provide that the data for you?
Sure. Yeah. So within Inside, there's a user interface, and in that you have something called load characteristics. And this is something the athletes and the coaches can see. And you have the makeup of aerobic and anaerobic power contribution at any given wattage is one of the graphs that you would see. Another graph is lactate production and combustion. And the cool thing is all this is available as a power only test. So I'm here in California, you guys are back on the East Coast. You send me the protocol, it takes me about 90 minutes start to finish to go through this, and you're able to give me all the insights and data that we're talking about here. And it's going to be as accurate as going into a lab using a metabolic cart. Plus you get the additional information we're talking about. So I just want that as kind of a background on how we would actually assess this for an athlete. So in terms of substrate utilization, what you're able to see in these load characteristics, as we call it, is actual fat versus carbohydrate combustion. So let's say for an athlete that may have a threshold of 300 watts, maybe their fat max is 180 watts. And at their fat max, that's, and it's going to be a bit of a range. Let's say it's between 160 and 200 watts. And in that range, they're probably combusting something like 500 to 600 kilocalories per hour. Now, on the lower end, 160 watts, maybe they're using 50 or 60 grams of carbohydrate. On the higher end, they might be using 100 grams of carbohydrate. Now, think about that. That's one Clif bar per hour. If you're going out for 5 hours, that's five additional Clif bars if you're on one side versus the other side. So we can start to get specific and have those conversations too. Like, okay, do you want to be on the lower end of things, still get some really good adaptations, and not really be feathering your the ability for you to come back and bounce back and recover because you're using all this carbohydrate? Or maybe we go slightly on the higher end because we know tomorrow is a recovery day or an off day, and you're going to have some time to top off your muscle glycogen stores in the days after that. So there's ways to look at it, but ultimately you're able to see gram to gram, kilocal to kilocal, how much substrate is being utilized at any given intensity. And this is very, very accurate. This is actually, you're actually seeing what's happening in active muscle tissue. And so with this, we now can create, whether it's a fueling strategy for your training or within a race scenario, start to figure out, is this pacing even realistic? Or what is the demand of this race if we're going out there trying to attain this type of time? So for Jeff, maybe he can look at Belgian Waffle Ride and think about, all right, what's my goal here? Is it to go sub 9 hours, 10 hours, 6 hours, whatever that might be, and then start to come up with some ideas around the pacing and fueling.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that, that Jeff and I actually have been speaking about quite a lot recently. And so for the listeners, if you, and there are many, many different studies, and there's already a study that says you can even take in more, but on average, it's depending on your size, your weight, and your height. But on average, it's 60 to 90 grams of carbs per hour is what you can absorb as a maximum. And the thing is, you're always already riding at a deficit if you're actually consuming, combusting at that rate. And just to kind of put that in context, if you eat one banana that has 104 calories, so that's 26 or 27 grams of carbs. So if you want to get to that 90, you have to eat 3.5-4 bananas per hour. to right, and the 90% is taking in account a 2-to-1 ratio between glucose and fructose, and a banana doesn't have that, right? So you're probably not with those four bananas, you're not even getting to that point. So it's very interesting to determine your fueling strategy with, let's say, the information you will get out of the inside training, which will give you the exact amount that you're burning at a certain wattage per hour, because every individual is different, and you need to take care of those, let's say, nuances. You have guidelines, and then you can get really specific, and Insight will allow you to do that.
Yeah, and just on a personal note with that, Jerry, I struggled myself with really figuring that out when I was training and racing, and to my own detriment. I mean, from a performance standpoint, I was always, as a tall person, I'm about 6'5", so I was always trying to be as lean as possible to be able to climb with some of these light climbers out there, and I just didn't realize the importance of fueling and fueling strategy and how much carbohydrate I was taking in. I was definitely a back burner item for myself. And fast forward, I'm pretty convinced that I've now had some heart arrhythmia issues. So I have AFib, and I think that's a pretty strong byproduct of some of these poor nutrition strategies and chronically being overtrained and not getting enough fuel into the system. And there's a pretty good correlation between just a drop off in performance. I'm not saying that everyone's going out there and training hard is going to have some sort of heart arrhythmia. That's by no means what I'm getting at, but if I were to say from a personal perspective, just knowing this information, giving myself a fighting chance to be a little bit smarter, be a little bit more predictive as to what's happening in a day of training, what's happening in the race scenario, and looking at it both on the macro and micro level, it gives you some huge advantages if you can really focus in and train your gut and get to that point where you can take in 60, 70, 80 grams of carbohydrate in an hour. That's something that most people don't work on. They don't even realize that that's possible, but that's an area that I think most people can really benefit from immediately.
Right. And exactly what you said, right? It's trying to stay or get as lean as possible, because at the end of the day, being faster is being lighter and pushing more watts. But at what cost are you going to do that, right? There is at some point, there is a tipping point. And if you're overtraining and underfueling, you're basically achieving the opposite and you're burning out. And that's, I think, something that you want to avoid. And that's, extremely important.
Yeah, just working with Jerry, you know, I found out I was under fueling as well. So the good thing is there's so many different options out there, you know, with Scratch Labs and some of these other things that were, you do get that palate where you don't want to eat anything else, you know, especially hour four, hour five, you're like, I'm done eating, but you take these energy drinks and you can keep on going. So that's been huge. But with the protocol, like, I know it's very specific about how to do the testing, but then you can also choose to do it indoors or outdoors. Is there any recommendation for any types of riders, or is it up to their preference?
Yeah, Jeff, that's a really good question. Something that comes up quite a bit. So our suggestion is you want to test in the environment that you're going to be training and racing in. And maybe you can't mimic the race environment, but you can mimic what you're doing in training. So the example would be an Ironman athlete who's training exclusively indoors and they're on their TT bike and they're out on the sticks. Well, you probably want to test in that environment because that's where you're training and that's when you're racing. You want to know what the data looks like. So that's example one. Example two is maybe a mountain biker and they only ride outdoors and the race is probably won or lost on short, punchier climbs. So you probably want to test them on a climb. And so it's very flexible in terms of where you're going to test, but we want to make it consistent. So if you're doing the test indoors, make sure the entire test is done indoors. If you're breaking up over multiple days, if it's done outdoors, let's keep it on the same terrain. If it's on the flats, if it's on a hill, doesn't matter where you're doing it, but just keep it consistent. And generally speaking, do it where you're going to do your intervals and in the position that you're going to be racing and doing your hard training in. And that's going to give you the best results. Now, in terms of the protocol, it's pretty straightforward. It's a 20-second sprint, and this is seated. And the reason why it's seated is we want to eliminate upper body contribution. Everyone's a little bit different, but you're going to get upwards of maybe 200 watts using your upper body when you're standing. And everyone's a little bit different in terms of how effective they are at translating upper body use and muscle to power generation. So we just want to take that straight off and say, look, we're just looking at what you can do seated. Number two is a 3-minute full gas effort. Number three is a 6-minute full gas effort. And then number four would be a 12-minute full gas effort. And these are all slightly flexible in terms of the time duration. And this is something where the athlete can work directly with their coach to figure out, is the strategy best to do it over 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, or even 4 days? My preference is break it up and do it over the course of a couple of days, because number one, it lightens the psychological burden or the load for the athlete. It's no longer this big thing. It's not a pass fail. They feel like, all right, I've got some time. I can go out there and go hard today for one or two intervals, come back tomorrow, do the same thing. That's number one. Number two, I think it's also important to see what's a snapshot in time, even though the differences are probably going to be pretty minuscule. We talked about this earlier with the good day and bad day not being a ton in terms of the watts that you actually put out, but it just allows the coach and the athlete to feel like, all right, we're getting a better cross-section analysis of this athlete versus all in on one day. If they have a slightly bad day, I'm kind of worried that the data might not be completely right. Even though that's probably not going to be the case, there's some really good checks and balances built into the software. But that being said, breaking it up over a couple of days makes it easier for everyone, generally keeps the athlete more engaged, and you can kind of slip it into the training a little bit easier for the coach.
Right. Yeah. One thing that we ran in with Jeff, and I didn't think about it, is his Quark power meter is broken on his road bike. So he took his gravel bike or his cyclocross bike, but it's a one by, so it has, what is it, 38, 13?
Yeah, 38, 12, I think is my tallest gear. As right. I spun it out in the 20, the 22nd.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah, so yeah. That's... but you live and learn and make sure that it doesn't happen the next time. But now that and I did the test myself in one day, and that's hard, right? It's all the effort and it is with the recovery in between. It is 90 minutes in total. So it is a mental game. You really have to prepare accordingly, take some rest beforehand, and then really dig into the actual test.
Yeah, and I want to note that we're talking about the power testing only. Right. So there's a couple ways that we can capture the data. One is power only, and this is limited to bike. So you can be remote, and the athlete can go out and over the course of a couple days or one day, as we've been talking about. Number two is power data plus lactate. So you can break this up, and part of the testing could be power. And this is done, let's say, on the athlete's own time, the day before they come into the quote lab and collect lactate from a couple of intervals. So you're able to combine power and lactate data into what we call the PPD, which is what we're talking about. And that's power performance decoder. In addition to that, we can take gas exchange information. We can take somebody's threshold data. We can take W prime. So think of Insight as your giant calculator that allows you to take all these disparate pieces of data and plug it in. So we're not beholden to power only. We're not beholden to cycling only. In fact, we can actually do any number of sports that, as long as they have a time and distance component, so speed skating, skiing, swimming, running, rowing, all these things are sports and athletes that we're able to assess and teams that are using it. So that's just something I want to throw out there. And we're about to be launching something called PPD Run, which is going to take running speed and give you all the same metrics that we've been talking about. So you can go out there, as long as you have some sort of GPS enabled device, go out there and perform this as a running speed test and get a complete metabolic profile. So again, VO2 max, LA max, threshold, substrate utilization, as well as lactate production and combustion. That's going to be launching the 1st of March.
That's interesting. Yeah, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but let's say the scientific knowledge is based off of at least 150 studies and scientific research. So it's not that you're collecting a huge database of insight tests and then extrapolating the data from that, and that's how you get to your numbers. No, it's not like that, right? It's purely based on scientific research by one or many researchers, and it's proven through working with all these pro teams in the past.
Yeah, so that's a really important point and something that we like to think differentiates inside from some of the other tools and modeling applications that are out there. So we are entirely based on the peer-reviewed science. And as you mentioned, over 150 different peer-reviewed pieces of literature make up the foundational pieces for Inside. So what that means is there's nothing that's statistically based. There's nothing that's looking at a power duration curve and asking the athlete to come in and fill in the blanks. And what we're doing is taking the actual ways in which you can compute or calculate somebody's VO2 max or VLA max and using that as the calculus for what are the raw data points. So what is your VO2 max? And maybe a better way to explain this is we aren't beholden to the data that we've collected through the different Inside tests. In fact, we're not taking that and aggregating that, because the foundation, the calculation for somebody's VO2 max has nothing to do with what 50 or 100 or 200 other people have done. It has to do with how do you calculate this based on the peer-reviewed science. And so that's how Inside goes about calculating all these different data points. And in addition to that, no one data point that we collect, so whether it's VO2 max or VLA max or threshold, is beholden on one test. And as I mentioned, there's checks and balances in place. So if you go out there and you feel like, oh man, my 12-minute test wasn't really that good, you don't need to worry about that data point pulling everything else down. There's some intelligence built into the actual test to be able to identify, yeah, this 12-minute effort was a little bit below the average, and we're going to find ways to go ahead and assess where this athlete should be, even if that one test or one piece of the interval wasn't as good as they maybe like to have it. Now, that also brings up an important point that 97.5% of our unique physiology, so almost 98% of what constitutes your unique physiology, Jeff's unique physiology, is based on your VLA max and your VO2 max. So what you can do for a very short period of time and what you can do over the course of, say, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And that gives you about 98% of everything that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that further illustrates maybe the disconnect from doing some of these longer tests and then taking a percentage to try to figure out what is our, what's this one data point that we then create everything spider webs out from that. Maybe we want to rethink how we consider that.
Right. So
yeah,
one of the questions that I got, but I would love to hear your answer. Who should make use of the Inside test and the protocol? Is that are those only the competitive athletes, or could it also be the age group athlete, or maybe even a recreational type of athlete? How would you look at that?
This is probably my favorite. This is my favorite question, hands down. So if I haven't been on my soapbox already, I guess I'll get up a little bit higher on it and say that the athlete that is time crunched, the athlete that only has 4, 5, 6 hours is going to be the greatest beneficiary of this information, because that athlete doesn't have time on their side. So the professional that's training 20, 30, 40 hours a week, they can make up for a lot of training inefficiencies with total volume. The athlete that only has a handful of hours per week, they can't do that. They don't have that luxury. They need to be very specific. So if you only have 4 training sessions and 5 hours a week, what are you doing during that time? All of it needs to be very focused. You can't have any waste versus somebody that's doing 20, 30 hours a week. They could mess around for 5 hours a week and it's not going to make a huge difference. Right. Now, I don't want to diminish the value for somebody that's a professional. We know that there's some real value there, but I think the greatest value is athletes that don't have time and don't have all these resources. They need to be more specific. They need to be really focused, and they need as much help as they can get, whether it's, hey, how much substrate, how much fuel am I using when I go out there and train? All right, now I know how much I need to replenish. Now I know what my fueling strategy needs to be. Or where's this race being won or lost? Let's deconstruct that. Those are the questions that I think we need to be really focused on, because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to train to get faster, whether it be for a Strava KOM, as crazy as that may sound,
right?
Or we want to go out there and perform as best as we can in the Belgian waffle ride like Jeff is trying to do. And these are the things where I would like to think that Inside gives those athletes and those coaches some competitive advantages, because they have all this information that they can now make really good use of.
Right. Yeah. So my answer was to that question, a lot of what you said, but it's also any athlete that's training towards a goal, right? If you're just training to stay in shape, that's almost like a goal by itself, right? But if you're training towards a goal, and it could be losing some weight, getting stronger, getting faster, completing a half Ironman, completing a Belgian waffle ride, you will benefit from this test in combination with your structured training, so you can really optimize the time that you spend training. Because, right, if you are not a professional, you're balancing your work, your family, your friends, the time on the bike or running, and not every week is like the other week, right? And a training program and the test will help you pinpoint and be as efficient and effective as possible.
Yeah, and maybe to take it one step further, I think the confidence that that athlete will take away from seeing this is we have this cool feature that's built in called a virtual analysis, where you can actually take, let's say it's Jeff, and increase Jeff's VO2 max by 5 milliliters, or we could reduce his VLA max, or reduce body comp, or reduce body fat. And you can actually see what's that look like out in the future. And what you're doing is figuring out as a coach or as an athlete, you have what I like to think of as these dials. So you hop in your car and maybe you've got your dashboard and you've got your speedometer, tachometer. Cycling or any endurance sport, you have these different dials. So you can put your hand on VO2 max, body composition, VLA max. And which one of those do I want to be heavy-handed with? Which one do I want to dial up? Which one do I want to dial down? And how much? What's the right ratio? And so you can start to play around with that and start to figure out what is the right mix to get this athlete to the start line, if we're talking about racing, or if it's just general fitness and well-being, what are the things to do to ensure that we're doing the right style of training to get that athlete happy and competitive? For a lot of people, it's just, I want to be a good all-arounder. Well, you can do that. You can certainly do that. Let's figure out what we need to do for you specifically based on the time, based on your what you like. And this is the other thing I really like to have answered is if an athlete likes to go out there and really go hard and do a lot of high intensity work, don't take that away from them. Maybe rein them in, but think about how you can use that to your advantage as a coach or even as the athlete. If you're self-coaching, we don't need to change everything. We just need to be a little bit more thoughtful about how we're prescribing.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, I think you made a good point about the time crunch cyclist too, because I know training smarter means, you know, I've got a family, I've got, you know, obligations around the house. And if I'm able to take that 4-hour ride, condense it down into 3 hours, you know, my wife is happier about it. Kids get to spend more time with dad. So it's a win-win for everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or another way to look at it could be, hey, instead of doing 5 1-hour sessions, I'm going to do 2 1-hour sessions and 1 3-hour ride.
Right.
And maybe that's going to give me better bang in terms of what I'm trying to achieve. And you take back 2 days where you're not even thinking about training and you don't have that time where you're putting the chamois on and doing everything else. So there's a net time savings over the course of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Greg, anything else that that we forgot to talk about being conscious of the time?
What do you guys think? Anything that we should hit on that hasn't been discussed?
No, you know, honestly, I can talk 3 more hours about this because we can really geek out in the nutrition details, even the technology details, right? I took a note where you said, okay, the power meeting and meter and going outside. One thing that I never realized is that your power meter needs to get used to the climate, right? So the humidity, the temperature, that can impact your power, right? I just recently read it. Makes complete sense. So that those are things that we can really geek out on. But I think for now, as an introduction and insight, and talking about VLA max, VO2 max, fat max, all those things, I think it has been a great introduction. Do you have anything else, Jeff, that you're curious about?
No, I think this is a good start. I mean, I think I could see this being a follow-up, you know, as we get into the season and start, Jerry, as you start getting more of your athletes tested on it, you know, we can come back with more questions and stuff and more specifics.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, so if you're interested in Insight, it's INSCYD. .com and obviously lowlandcycling.com is also a very good site to find some content about Insight, and please reach out and let us know if you have any more questions. Absolutely no problem. More than happy to answer anything that you want to know. Greg, any final thoughts from your end?
No, I appreciate you guys taking the time, and yeah, I would be more than happy to come back. And Jerry, you nailed it. Inside, INSCYD.com. And then we're all pretty easy to get a hold of. If you have questions specific to the software or anything that I talked about, you can reach out to me, whether it be directly through Jerry, or you should be able to find me through all the various social media platforms. I'm pretty easy to find.
Right. And you mentioned it before, but I do want to underscribe that is you can do it remote. You don't have to be in the studio or anything like that with the protocol. You can do it remote using Swift or going outdoors. Absolutely no problem. And you will get the results that I wouldn't say that you're looking for, but you will get accurate results if you follow the protocol.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be the same level of accuracy in terms of VO2 max that you would get using a calibrated metabolic cart. So let's say a Cosmed K5, plus you're going to get all the additional data points that we've talked about. And you can do this on the bike that you're training and racing on. So you don't have to worry about a discrepancy from the lab equipment to the bike that you're training on and trying to recalibrate zones or wattages, things like that. So it's a more seamless way to do it.
Absolutely. Okay. Okay, Greg, thank you so much. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Nice to meet you again, Jeff, Jerry. Yeah, nice we'll to be meet in you. Touch. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.